Hi, everybody, and this is our continuation of a treatise on white magic. And we have thus far, and it was probably a half a year ago, done the first section, the introduction, and the rules for the mental plane. Now we are working on a very extensive section. It's the rules for the astral plane. And it begins with rule 7. Now I'll try, you know, as I go along, if it looks advisable, to keep these approximately to an hour of duration. I think people find it easier, though it's not easier for me. I'd like to keep going and spare the time for the conversion factors that I have to go through here. But anyway, let's begin. Simply, we have done at least 50 commentaries, and we're on approximately, I think, page 217. And so let's take this important book and see what little we can understand of it. Rule 7, rules for the astral plane. The dual forces on the plane, wherein the vital power must be sought, are seen. The two paths face the solar angel. The poles vibrate. A choice confronts the one who meditates. It's kind of interesting because the solar angel, in a way, has a very high elevation. One of the charts shows it focused on the Buddhic plane, and it's obviously projecting itself into the higher mental plane, and accompanies, in a way, the soul in incarnation as that soul descends into the personality spheres. Of course, this soul in incarnation is a projection of the monad. Everything is the monad. The consciousness of the triad is the attenuated consciousness of the monad. The consciousness within the egoic lotus is the still more attenuated consciousness of the monad. And the soul in incarnation, the consciousness within the personality, is a very greatly attenuated consciousness of the monad. So this one who meditates, that's who we are, but we're really the monad in extension. We are the monad in attenuation. And as veil after veil is lifted, as we progress, we'll discover more and more that we are this being itself, which is pure being, still within a vehicle, a monadic vehicle, and it'll be a long time before pure being has no vehicle, and that is really at the dissolution of every universe. So we're talking about good and evil here, and the right-hand path and the left-hand path, and it's the, I believe that the paths that face the solar angel are facing the solar angel in extension, because it's accompanying that monadic projection into incarnation. The solar angel, in a way, is always there in extension. As I've often said, I don't think the fullness of the solar angel can be found within the egoic lotus, because it's just too great a being. And if the Buddhic love, our own Buddhic love, is instrumental in destroying the causal body at the fourth initiation, what would the power of a being who had been to Sirius for training and was once an initiate in the previous solar system and so forth, but had gone beyond that, what would that power be in terms of the destruction of the causal body? I just don't think the entirety of the solar angel could be resident within the causal body. This is my thinking on this matter. And the old saying goes, having pervaded the entire universe with a fragment of myself, I remain. So the solar angel remains as itself within the cosmic ethers, but falls again into the dense physical body of the solar logos and takes up a kind of residence within the egoic lotus, along with the extension of the monad. These two types of consciousness blend and merge, I guess you could say. And then even farther, the solar angel descends and deals with the mental unit and finds a place as well within the brain. So there are many sacrificial extensions of this projection of the solar angel. Sacrificial extensions. I guess we have to look and understand, if we can, what is multidimensional consciousness, you know. The same entity has differing levels of consciousness on different levels, and yet it is still the same entity. And I've sometimes talked in my book about infinitization, called infinitization of selfhood, about dimensional sealing, S-E-A-L-I-N-G. So the lower extensions are not aware of the higher, but the higher can be aware of the lower. Anyway, let's see about these two paths, because, you know, it's obvious that on the astral plane, the desire body is active, and a choice can be made there for the right-hand path, which is the path sponsored by Sirius, and begins in earnest with a kind of Sirian discipleship at the human third degree, and the left-hand path, which is not of Sirius, and is involved with some kind of Devic development, and which does not lead to sacrificial, loving expression. Rather, it leads along the path of Mahat, which is pure mind and without love. And that, of course, is the main thing that these beings from the previous solar system are facing. They have developed a great deal of mind. They were initiates in the previous solar system, the first great solar system, major solar system, and they want to preserve that, and they don't want to complicate their path by the adding of another divine aspect which will call upon them for the factor of sacrifice. So let's see what the Tibetan says. The first thing is the battleground of the astral plane. And we realize that it's there that big fights occur. It is a plane of battle. And on our planet, which is which has a logos who is not yet astrally stabilized, the reflection is in our own astral body, and we have major struggles with our desire body, our astral body, our emotional body. We have struggles. We are a warring kingdom, the fourth. We're ruled by Scorpio. Scorpio has a lot to do with the astral body and the conquest of the astral body at the second initiation, and sometimes we just don't know which way to go. We're tempted towards the left, and we can even be tempted towards the right. In other words, one can be tempted by low things, but one can be tempted to try to become a god. Some of the emperors in the old Roman days were tempted in that direction, towards a supreme egotistical elevation that they thought was godship. And they thought it was very high, but actually it was still subservient to their egotistical limitations. Okay, well, a little bit of a introduction. Suffice it to say, Master DK said that this book is all about the control of the astral body, the conquering of the tendencies of the astral body. And when you think about the Buddha with his very strong sixth ray in his mind, his mission was to teach humanity what desire was, and to make sure that the desires for the phenomenal world, the lower world of the dense physical body of the planetary logos, and even the 21 subplanes, which we call the dense physical body of the solar logos, that those phenomenal worlds within the dense physical body did not attract the desire of the true monk, the true being, human being, heading into the unity and trying to be that unity. We could be greatly retarded if we remain desiring that which is evanescent, that which is not real, that which disappears, namely the world of phenomena. Of course, in a sense, the entire cosmic physical plane, cosmically considered, is a world of phenomena. And if we take it further from the perspective of some of the very greatest logoi, even the lower 18 cosmic subplanes, each one of our systemic planes is such a cosmic subplane, that would be considered a world of phenomena as well, depending upon the perspective of the god or the being who is observing the different aspects of the planes. But anyway, we don't have to worry about that. Most of our fulfilled spirituality occurs on the cosmic physical plane. And even the Christ is still focused on the cosmic physical plane, and the Buddha too. So we don't have to worry about the higher cosmic subplanes, the seven cosmic subplanes of the cosmic astral plane, and the four and three cosmic subplanes of the cosmic mental plane. Those are things that will be facing the masters of the Chohans, and even it's the planetary logoi and even the solar logos who has to deal with those matters. It's just to have this expanding point of view as a possibility and to have it in mind. Okay, what's it like to be a human being? Well, there's a great struggle. And especially on this planet, interestingly, whose symbol is the cross. And yet the cross is circled, which means there is finally a unitive resolution rather than a pulling in four different directions. In some way, we human beings psychologically are drawn and quartered. We are pulled apart by our tendencies, and we have to somehow bring them all together into a unity and rise, making the let's say the even-armed cross into a pyramid. And that fifth elevated point will signal initiation, in which great unities are revealed. We must start our study in consideration of the seventh rule for magic. We have completed the first six rules, which deal specifically with work on the mental plane. And of course, you know, we have to reread these things to really keep them in mind, because at our stage of development, we're supposed to be mental creators within the light of the soul. You know, so I'll put that there. We are to be mental creators within the light of the soul, and hence have a practical value only for those who are beginning to utilize the power of mind in the magical work of creation. Now, magic is not only a goodness, a seventh ray process, but a third ray process as well. Maybe I don't want to use numbers there. Seventh ray process, but a third ray process as well. In one of those tabulations in the Destiny of the Nations, the third ray type is listed as the magician and the seventh ray type as the ritualist, but obviously they are, you know, closely related. Now, you know, supposedly we are people of our type, let's just say, you know, nothing all that high about it, but we're coming to the point of mental focus. And whereas we might not yet have achieved mental polarization, which is a condition which supervenes upon the successful repudiation of the dweller between the second and third initiations, at least we are, by studying the Tibetan, certainly training our minds, and because we have partially trained minds, we are inclined to study with the Tibetan. We are, as he says, seeking mental polarization, and those who add that quest for mental focus, mental polarization, to the many requirements for the first degree can be considered to be pursuing the second degree. So I would say, you know, that a great many of the earnest students of Master DK see the second degree in sight. And, you know, maybe some have gone on and see the third degree in sight, and the actual number of third degree initiates at this time probably is not great. It is interesting to note in this connection that as humanity enters into its heritage of mind, very much in the Aquarian age and under Mercury after maybe 720 years, or the first decanate of Aquarius, there appears simultaneously a growing tendency towards magical work. You know, the rays are correct to produce this. And Aquarius is interesting. It has a lot of the fifth ray in it. It passes through. This ray passes through that constellation, but there is something of the third ray there as well. Maybe there's some connection to the first ray, and the seventh ray accompanies Aquarius and is part of the expression of Aquarius because of Uranus, which is the orthodox ruler of Aquarius, but also maybe the highest of the veiled rulers by the veiling moon, which is the hierarchical ruler of Aquarius. So seventh ray Uranus is very prominent in this particular particular sign. So anyway, magical work, for the most part, requires mentality and a well disciplined and exacting mentality if things are not to get out of control. You know, if we mindlessly use the magical formulas, we can be a little bit like the old cartoon where Mickey Mouse, you know, Walt Disney Productions, he just, the brooms and the pails just started running away with the show because he could start them but didn't know how to stop them. So we don't want to mindlessly use magical formulas which have somehow been handed down to us and about which we know very little. One has to be very careful. One has to be very circumspect about the magical process. Otherwise, the pentagram, it can be a place of danger because in a way it's open, and chaotic energies or energies producing chaos can flood in. Schools of affirmation are cropping up on all sides. People, you know, it's really, what can you say? It's run by desire. Whose announced intent is to create those natural conditions wherein a man may have what he deems to be admirable and advisable. In other words, let's call it affirmation for the fulfillment of desire. And, you know, whether that's personal desire or selfless desire will depend upon the quality of the individual. Here, you know, I'm using some strange combination of British English and American English, so there will be some words that look like they don't belong, but they are correct in one of those approaches to English. So schools of affirmation are cropping up on all sides, whose announced intent is to create those natural conditions wherein a man may have what he deems to be admirable and advisable. So you affirm that such and such will appear. Very much magic is about appearance from inner states into manifested states. Appearing and disappearing are factors in the magical process. And I think I'll just kind of put that down. Appearing and disappearing are important factors in the magical process. Okay. Books on the subject of the creative mind, and the third ray, the ray of creative manifestation. It's a creative ray. Books on the subject of creative mind are flooding the markets, and discussions on the force back of the creative arts are deemed of vital interest. So, you know, what is, in other words, what we're looking for here, what are the causes behind effects? And that's what makes the occultist the one who successfully pursues these causes. There is a creative intelligence. It is related to the creative ray, one of the creative rays anyway, the third ray, which subsumes 4, 5, 6, and 7. And ray 4 is very creative. It's identified with the fourth method of inducing soul control, the urge to the creative life. Psychologists are giving the entire matter much consideration, and though at present the ideal is viewed almost entirely in terms of the physical plane, so material and phenomenally oriented are we, yet the sum total indicates a vibratory activity in the world's soul. Not just the anima mundi as it relates to the subconscious aspects, but the higher world soul as well, of which the human soul is a part, indicates a vibratory activity of the world soul as it expresses itself through humanity and issues forth from the mental realm. So we are going deeper into the realm of causes, and occultism would have us do no less. And when we're dealing with spiritual occultism, we look for quite high causes. If we're just looking at mental occultism, which can create a lot of mischief, we need not go so high into the realms where the beings are selfless. The pioneers of the race and the foremost thinkers and creative workers of humanity are but the sensitives who respond most readily to the mental impulses. So that's what we want to become, and we want to begin to respond to the transcendental mind which is the mind of the Buddhic plane, revealing pure reason. So it's not just the concrete mental impulses that we want to deal with, but the higher mind, the abstract mind, the transcendental mind, and then finally the spiritual or nirvanic mind of the atmic plane. See, and how many of us can, when we look at our mental life, cover or respond to all those levels of influence or impulse? Anyway, people on the cutting edge of spiritual occultism should be becoming the pioneers of the race, and we should be becoming increasingly sensitive, and that by the nature of our thought and how much we manage to make our mind available to the light of the soul. Because it's not just reasoning on the lower mental plane that will refine the mind, it will bring it to a certain point, but it is contact with the light of the soul and higher lights that will really refine the mind and make it a natural habit to receive and understand these impulses and to clothe them in the proper thought matter. So these pioneers of the race, they are in the minority as yet, and most people respond to the forces and vibrations emanating from the plane of the emotions and desires. So we still have a largely emotionally polarized humanity, maybe 80%. And in general, those who are coming from the moonchain or from previous solar system should no longer be emotionally polarized. They've come from a chain in which the third ray, it being the third chain, is very important, and they've come from, some of them, excuse me, from a solar system which is really the fourth solar system, the personal solar system, and dealing with the mentality of the solar logoic personality. Again, the three is very important. It's the first of three, and we could even look at it in this way. Ray three, the immediately preceding solar system, ray two, this major solar system, and ray one, the following solar system, and the seventh would be a union somehow of the effect of all of them. More and more, however, are awakening, and the significance of the six first rules of magic will become increasingly apparent. So, spiritual occultists of the modern day have to have a good mind, an inquiring mind, a mind which can clothe thought or ideas in the appropriate mental matter. And we're learning how to do that. You know, so many people say, oh my goodness, it's difficult to study the Tibetan. And these days, when our attention span seems to be dramatically reduced, and we almost suffer from, what's it called, attention deficit, you know, we have to have one changing scene after another, one image after another. To read a book through and to ponder it is becoming something of a rarity. People don't have the patience for it. But the depth of occultism will really require that kind of patience. So, you know, to overcome this tendency towards flightiness, the superficial Geminian and Mercurian mind, which likes to hop from thing to thing without plumbing the depths of what that thing may be and what its relations may be. Now, Master DK, difficult though he may be, and speaking in a very refined English that he worked out with Alice Bailey and she with him, is giving us the chance to go deeper if we really see the issues and have the patience. You know, we love novelty. Society loves novelty. And if something is a few years old, now the Alice Bailey books maybe began 80 years ago. Well, actually, they began 100 years ago, didn't they? Almost. 1919, wasn't it? The beginning of Letters on Occult Meditation, she began to take down those dictations from him. It's really considered old hat. And obviously, what is newer is better. But that isn't true, of course. And sometimes the classics are established. And you have to go to the classics for the true word on things, rather than all the superficial spin-offs and knockoffs that take the central place in many esoteric bookstores. So it really boils down here to a sense of values, and we have to know what is really worthwhile when we're studying these deep matters and what will give us a superficial and misleading exposure, which may gratify our lower ego somewhat because it's full of praise for people who follow a certain line of thought, but it's not real and it leads nowhere. And sadder but wiser, we will awake later to realize that we have been misled. So stick with the classics. The Secret Doctrine, thought Alice Bailey, contains information which can be found nowhere else. I think she's correct. It's that way with the Tibetans' material too. Treatise on Cosmic Fire, the psychological interpretation, extension of the Secret Doctrine, and other books of such depth that they present, well, they prevent superficiality, that's for sure. They present the rules which will be operative for group development during the Aquarian Age. So why get rid of them so fast and say, oh my goodness, that was written 70 years ago. What has it to do with us? So be discriminating and try to discern the real behind the presentation of the outer form. Now these 15 rules, okay? They're divided into 6 rules for the mental plane, 5 rules on the desire or astral plane, and 4 rules on the physical plane. As number 15 is involved, that's a number having a lot to do with Kumaric life. The 1 and 5 are there, it totals to 6. It's interesting because that number 6 is so related to the astral plane and also to the monadic plane. And this is a book, principally, DK tells us, on the control of the astral body, which all disciples really need. We've seen some disciples who were candidates for the second initiation, but their astral body was severely stimulated in the wrong way because of the pressure of that initiation and probably the rising up of Mars in order to be finally subdued so that the third initiation could be approached from the level table land, as he says, and not from the heights of aspiration and so forth. The main thought to be clearly held in mind is that they confine themselves to the use of energy in the three worlds. Okay, well, there's enough going on right there on the etheric, physical, emotional, and mental levels without getting into the what the masters have to deal with, how to use energy on the triadal levels of the cosmic ethers. So they confine themselves to the use of energy in the three worlds, which certainly have to be mastered if a An individual is to call himself a master. He's a master of the three worlds, even though his consciousness is increasingly polarized in the worlds of the cosmic ethers, you know, Buddhic and Atmic particularly. And that this energy is either consciously manipulated by the governing soul or is swept into activity by the force inherent in the matter of the three worlds independently of the soul. So right there is a hint, isn't it? This is a strong hint about the dual forces. So we're either going to control from the soul perspective these energies, or the energies themselves will be swept into activity by something much closer to their own nature, and by the force inherent in matter, probably related to the previous solar system. I have a feeling that everything in the dense physical body, let us say, of the planetary logos, especially, and maybe of the solar logos, is an inheritance from the previous solar system. And because it is the dense physical body, it is still not redeemed in terms of the second divine aspect, which is meant to be expressive in this solar system. So we have a lot of work to do to clean up that inheritance from a previous solar system, and kind of a reflected inheritance from the moon chain. There's a lot of unfinished forms and patterns of energy and force which have been brought over from the moon chain for redemption on this particular chain. And hence, it's difficult here to deal with the energies which are appropriate to the fourth chain of the Earth scheme, and energies which would be more appropriate to the third chain of the Earth scheme. Now that third chain is called by another name, and maybe it's been reformulated. It's called the Saturn chain, but there's a lot of hangover left over from what was the uncompleted process of the moon chain. Saturn and the moon, of course, being very closely related to each other, each of them having a lot to do with concretion. Okay, so there's two ways we can go. We can consciously manipulate the energies and forces, and that's the right-hand path, or we can just kind of be swept by these more elemental forces and then sort of allow them to go in the direction of our lower desires. Not very constructive approach. So, okay, when this is the case, the man is a victim of his own form energies and the matter aspect of all manifestation. So, in other words, he is overcome by his own dweller on the threshold. He's overcome by his own dweller, and he doesn't master that dweller, and therefore he's allowing a lower aspect of divinity to run the show. In other cases, he is the intelligent ruler, the king, the Leo, you know, he's not the moon, he's the sun, controller of his own destinies, as he probably has many within the one great monadic destiny, many destinations within the one great destination, and swings the lower energies into forms and activities through the power of his mind impulses and the focused attention of his own soul. Now, we might say that even a black magician, let's see if I can get that correct, BMGN, I'm going to black magician. Even a black magician can do that, can do this, but the direction of the control will be selfish and not in accordance with the divine plan. In the six rules already considered, one or two thoughts most clearly emerge and might be summed up in the following terms. Well, you know, he seems to be reviewing for us some factors that we need as a basis for our entry into the rules for the astral plane. So, and he's using the mnemonic, the method of similar or the same letter to help us group these methods together in a way more easily remembered. Recollection, gathering the forces together, resulting in concentration and the possibility of interaction between the solar angel. The solar angel is recollecting. Response, resulting in an interaction between the higher and lower. So the meditating oriented man responds to the solar angel, angel of the presence, which attempts to get in touch with it. There's a radiation, which is the effect within the personality when soul energy enters, and then a second sounding forth. And then respiration. One must breathe and eventually drive the thought form from himself on the breath. There is going to be a reunion of soul and personality. There must be an at-one-ment, and the communication will be much better when you have a really soul-infused personality, and reorientation all the time so that a clearer vision of the plan comes into focus. So somehow, you know, think of it, the Tibetan gives us a wonderful explanation of these initial rules, but then he somehow boils it all down to one word: recollection, response, radiation, respiration, reunion, and reorientation. And I think students would do well to consider these relationships and to work on the underlying synthesis. And what I'd like to do, just for fun and in this context, is go to a treatise on white magic from the very beginning and just read these six. This one is called Recollection. The solar angel collects himself, scatters not his force, but in meditation deep communicates with his reflection. The next word, indicative word, is called response. When the shadow hath responded, in meditation deep the work proceedeth. The lower light is thrown upward, the greater light illuminates the three, and the work of the four proceedeth, all the personality factors and the soul factor. The next word of epitomization is radiation. The energy circulates. The point of light, the product of the labors of the four, waxeth and groweth. The myriads gather round its glowing warmth until its light recedes, its fire grows dim. Then shall the second sound go forth. I suppose, you know, this little point of light is making its own sound, but then the magician himself, or the aspiring magician, sounds the second sound. And he deals with this in the latter part of Rule 3. The next is respiration. Sound, light, vibration, and the form blend and merge, and thus the work is one. It proceedeth under the law, and naught can hinder now the work from going forward. Here is your respiration. The man breathes deeply. He concentrates his forces and drives the thought form from him. Then the fifth epitomization is reunion. Three things engage the solar angel before the sheath created passes downward. The condition of the waters, because, you know, it's being formulated on the mental plane first, right? It has to descend into the astral and etheric conditions. The condition of the waters, the safety of the one who thus creates, and steady contemplation. Thus are the heart, the throat, and eye allied for triple service. So that's the union, the atonement of the heart, the throat, and the eye, each creating the condition by means of which the creation of the four can pass downward successfully without being destroyed. And finally, reorientation. The devas of the lower four feel the force when the eye opens. They are driven forth and lose their master. I guess the soul is becoming the director at that point. Eventually, with the Maya Varupa, it is completely that way. But the personality with its selfishness, the non-subservient personality, the personality non-subservient to the soul, is no longer the director. So there are four aspects to the personality: mental, emotional, etheric, physical. Well, then, if we want to count the personality as a whole, as a deva or an elemental, then that's another way of counting four, uniting the etheric and physical as one. And the lower master is lost. So this, the Tibetan considers to be foundational for our work with the astral plane. Recollection resulting in concentration. The soul concentrates upon the personality. Response of the personality resulting in an interaction between higher and lower. Radiation resulting in a sounding forth. Respiration resulting in creative work. Reunion resulting in the atonement, heart, throat, and eye, and reorientation to the soul, really, the soul as director, resulting in a clear vision of the plan. Now, I wonder how many of us, when we're deciding to do something, are careful about creating the circumstances in which we intend to produce. Are we really thinking of the plan? Do we align with the soul, or do we just operate on impulse? There's a lot of self-questioning that can go into these matters. Students would do well to consider these relationships and to work out the underlying synthesis, because he seems to say the six rules are synthesized into one mental process. And of course, we do have to begin with the mind. This is not a leaping into the process just filled with aspiration and without our head on our shoulders. We have to see clearly through a well-controlled mind what we are undertaking and proceed at first, well, maybe always, with great caution. Otherwise, we can burn up, we can drown, we can suffocate, you know. He says maybe death by air is not so much known in today's world, but death by suffocation, by drowning, and by burning certainly are known, and the various devas of the personality can be involved in those kinds of fatalities which come upon the incautious magician. In the words of this rule, the astral plane, with its function and problem, is ably synthesized. So let's repeat the rule. The dual forces on the plane, whereon the vital power must be sought, are seen. It is a conscious way, right? The two paths face the solar angel. The poles vibrate and thus attract, you know, one way or another. A choice confronts the one who meditates. And we do have to remember that Libra and the Ajna Center can be involved quite a bit in the choice of the left-hand path. I mean, we notice Hitler's chart. Some of the old stories seem to link him with a failed knight of the Grail by the name of Klingsor, who found his way into an opera that Wagner wrote, Parsifal. And Klingsor's quest was to spoil the attempts of the other knights of the Grail, even as he had fallen. So, was Hitler that character? Was that character real? Okay, we're not sure, but Hitler did have a strong combination of Taurus, Sun, and Libra, rising sign, and Libra could be well put at the Ajna Center where the choice is made, and Taurus associated with the sacral center. And there is a stage where the higher energies can be forced down into the sacral center, and the person becomes extremely magnetic and attractive in a lower sort of way. I mean, we do know that Taurus is a sign which is connected with sexuality. I think he had a lot of abnormalities there. And Libra with the choice. And his choice was for power and authority and maybe, you know, like world rulership or something. And he was a megalomaniac. There was plenty of Leo going on there. And basically a hardened man with the moon in Capricorn, and his choice was not for the way of love, though I think with a sixth-ray personality, he probably glamored himself into thinking that he loved those who were worthy of love, namely the master race, and not the distortions of the plan of providence that is found in all the other so-called degenerate races. Actually, I think there was a huge inferiority complex operating, as well as some deep suspicion that he might have so-called Jewish blood in his heredity. So it was a psychologically twisted expression. However, that choice was there with his rising sign, and he did choose the left-hand path towards the sacral center. Material acquisition, the resources of other countries. We remember DK telling us that if the Nazis had won, they would have produced the most materialistic civilization the world has ever seen. And that's quite a statement considering how materially oriented Atlantis was. But then again, it was a replay, right? The same principles were involved, principal characters, and there was a great battle of Kurukshetra, and the same leaders were involved on both sides, which is, you know, an amazing thought and can only be confirmed by someone who can read the records. All we know is that's more or less what DK said. The same leaders were involved in that great battle as in the replay of that battle on a higher turn of the spiral, a more mental turn of the spiral in our modern day. So, in the words of this rule, the astral plane with its function and problem is ably synthesized. And note the terms used in the description given in a few short phrases. The plane of dual forces, the plane of the two paths, you know, the right and left, the plane whereon the vital power, the power of desire and aspiration, I suppose, the motivating power, which ideas just kind of die if they don't have that desire to see them realized behind them, within them, the plane of the vibrating poles, attracting or repelling, the plane whereon a choice, and there's your Libra, let choice be made. Now, the majority of people choose correctly towards the Sirian system of initiation, and only a few are so corrupted by previous material tendency that they choose incorrectly and evade the program of this second major solar system. So anyway, he's broken it down for us, and all of these factors are interrelated. One of the most vital things every aspirant has to do is to learn to understand the astral plane, to comprehend its nature, and to learn both to stand free from it and then to work on it without danger to himself and others. Now, you know, when we do the glamour meditation, the technique of light, which the Tibetan gave us, we're very careful to create that cross of divinity involving the ajna, the center of the chest, and the two eyes. And that is a protective method, keeping the consciousness of the worker within the light, because it's so easy, you know. People waltz into this area in a careless manner without thinking about the possibility that they may be overcome by something they do not understand. So the cross of divinity here, is helping them. So in this instruction, I seek to give some clear teaching on this plane. For the moment a man can see on the astral plane and can achieve equilibrium, there's your Libra, and hold steady in the midst of its vibrating forces, that moment he is ready for initiation. And I would suspect we are minimally talking about the second initiation, or maybe something beyond it. But because there's, you know, quite a battle between the first and second in stabilizing the astral body, and then we get a number of the planets that bring in a degree of serenity through the second ray, Venus, and the steadiness of the fifth ray, and Jupiter is second ray soul, and Neptune bringing in a profound second ray monadic influence, and maybe at times a calming effect when it's not inducing storms when allied with Mars. Well, okay, we have begun, and I've been wanting to do this. This would be the end of A Treatise on White Magic, number one, and rules for the astral plane. And what I'll do here is rules for the astral plane and rules for the astral plane. Five rules for the astral plane. And today is the 7th of July, 2018, and beginning of A Treatise on White Magic video commentary. Number two. And the rules for the astral plane. And again, I'm not sure when I can begin this. Maybe a little bit later. But at least we're launched. And there are some really strong rules here. Some of them going 100-150 pages. But we'll get there, and a lot of the roots of the esoteric astrology book are found in this in this book and in these series of rules. You kind of wonder why they have to do with the astral plane, but okay, apparently they do. So we'll move on, and I'll make these available on YouTube, and eventually they'll be available on the Makara site, and you'll be able to study them if you wish. Right now, the first 50 programs are on Makara, but not yet on YouTube. It's quite a process to try to transfer them over, but I'll begin putting these on YouTube, and you can go either way, okay? All right, thank you, and onward we go.